legends, and welcome to Unbeatable You, where we connect, thrive, and conquer. I'm your host, Brett Robbo, and I'm super grateful for your valuable time. So let's just dive straight in. Keep thriving and enjoy. It's Anthony, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Don't worry, I've had that a few times in my career. I still got it. Oh, what was it the other day? What was it? A couple of months ago. Someone called me Anthony. I just run with it. I'm sick of correcting people.
If that's what they're going to chat about, let's just talk that. Yeah. I know your name is Mark, and so I'm welcoming you as Mark. And Mark Minicello, you might be known for a very long and successful footy career, and people are inspired by your athleticism. But to be honest, mate, I'm inspired by the fact that you get through a long career like that, but more so that you're a father of four and you still look after yourself and you've got a thriving relationship with your beautiful wife. So, mate, tell me every trick under the book about being a father.
Thanks very much, Rob. I appreciate that, mate. The career was probably easy compared to fathering of four boys. So that's something that is an ongoing challenge, and you're learning every day. It's very rewarding but very challenging to have four young boys that are at the age now where they start to stand up and question you a little bit as well, which is a good thing. But
how old are they?
So my eldest is 12 turning 13, and I've got 10 turning 11, 9 turning 10, and then my youngest just turned 4.
Yeah, wow, that's full.
So, yeah, it's been a challenging 10 or 12 years of nonstop, little boys growing up, and, you know, we've done a whole lot with them, you know, moving to England and back and traveling with them, and now getting settled back here on the coast is it's something that does challenge you a little bit, but we love the challenge, and we love to expose them, especially travel with them and expose them to different cultures, and I'm pretty proud that they're quite open and somewhat good young kids.
I've only seen the good side of them, mate. We've been out to your place plenty of times. You guys have got a really beautiful space out there in the valley with the creek out the back and plenty of room for them to roam. And one of the parts that I'm inspired by, like I said, is your thriving relationship with your beautiful wife, Milena, and also the way that you guys really prioritize your health, your top core value of health for the whole family, which must be challenging to live in alignment with that, with growing boys that are super hungry, and you guys get top quality as in like organic or, yep, you know, locally sourced food all the time. So talk to me a little bit about that and the challenges of that within a family dynamic, and how you got into looking after yourself in that way and prioritizing, yep, the good quality foods.
Yeah, that like you said, it is definitely a core value of ours. Milena and I, that's something that we have non-negotiable with. We eat organically, and that I would say would be 95% of the time is organically, locally sourced, and we try and support local farmers as much as possible, regenerative farming practices. And so that's something that is a non-negotiable for us, and it's something that we, I guess, sacrifice in other areas to make sure that we have that for not ourselves but our boys as well. I guess we started on this journey many years ago now, probably over 10 years ago, when I was still playing here at the Titans, the last year at the Titans, and I was having some real troubles with my shoulder, just really inflamed, irritated, couldn't lift much in the gym. At the end of that season, I had an arthroscope, just a clean up, and then we moved overseas to England. And that's where we sort of started to dive into nutrition and more, I guess, natural ways to downregulate inflammation and use food as medicine rather than chemicals and anti-inflammatories and drugs and things like that, which is just handed out like lollies when you play in the NRL.
Exactly. You know, that's what I was going to ask. If that's the norm, really, for that to be inflammation and inflammatories. Inflammation, cortisol injection, cortisone injection, inflammation or pain, painkillers.
Yes, and that still goes on today. Like that's just the way it is. You know, they want to get you back on the field as fast as possible. And you as a player want to get back on the field as quick as possible. You know, you don't want to be out injured. You don't want to be doing rehab. So if you can take a painkiller or an anti-inflammatory and mask those symptoms, so to speak, then you're back out on the field, aren't you? Mm. So it's something that I wanted to get away from. And, you know, Anthony went through a whole lot of back issues and operations, and he changed a lot of his diet to support his health and get back on the field and play again. And, so that was sort of the starting point of where, you know, we always love food. Growing up Italian, food, everything's based around food. I wouldn't say it was, you know, the healthiest options were growing up. It was a lot of pastas and you know, but it was all homegrown, like mostly homegrown, but homemade. Mum would make everything in the kitchen. And that is something that we take on today. Like Melinda's parents were the same. They would always cook. Their Italian background as well. So we always cook our own food. That's something we don't go out or we don't buy any processed food. Melina would make, we'll make everything from scratch. So if we're going to have a treat, Melina would make it, and it would be a healthier option rather than using processed sugars or flours and things like that. You know, healthier options. And so we went to England and I started playing. I think I played 35, 36 games the first year, which is a lot more games over there because you run two competitions. And my body was, you know, I was 32, 33 at the time. So I was pulling up sore, you know, playing. I averaged 73 minutes through that whole season. So I was playing 80 minutes most games.
Wow.
35, 36 games that first year. And I started making some changes. And then at the end of that year, I was like, oh, if I'm going to do this longer, like for longer than another year, then, you know, I've got to really look at my nutrition and make it a more of a habit and do it properly. And that's where it sort of started, that journey. We went full organic and I had a lot more time to do some research. We'd finish training by 1 o'clock some day. So I'd, you know, dive in and do some self-education and read up, you know, different articles and different books and just educate myself around what real nutrition is and you know, all the lifestyle factors that influence performance and how can we go more holistic with my performance at 33, 4, 5, 6, 7. And, you know, I can easily say that I was recovering a lot quicker than 22-year-olds after games and, you know, I was 36, 37 still playing and recovering quicker than the young guys over there. And, it, you know, I put it down to lifestyle and nutrition without a doubt.
So nutrition's an obvious one that people can think about. What were some of the things that you kind of replaced? So if the club was offering Gatorade and sugary drinks and things like that, what were you replacing that with? And even like protein powders and how you were eating? What did that look like at the back end of your career compared to your front end of your career and also what people were still doing around you at the back end of your career?
I remember when I debuted at the Roosters in 2002 and then the following year I moved to South and I remember, you know, protein shakes, pre-workout, protein afterwards. And then I remember we had a little kitchen there at South and we used to make there was a microwave in there. So we used to, one of the trainers at the time used to eat, put two eggs in a bread roll and put it in the microwave and then just cook it up and then we used to eat that. And it's like, oh, my God, I think back now and think, oh, what am I doing to myself? No wonder I was in so much pain back then. but it's a lot of protein shakes. And people think you need protein to build muscle. And, yes, to an extent that's true, but not in the form of a protein shake or an isolated protein form. In a real food natural way, that's a much better, you know. When we talk about protein shakes, I've got a bit of a bugbear with that because they isolate the protein and a lot of them are just full of sugars and carbs and crap.
Yep.
You know, if you read the ingredient list behind the protein shake, you'd be shocked at what you see. But this concept of like holism, and when we eat protein, we need fats and we need all the essential amino acids the enzymes and the cofactors that come along with the real food to help us digest and assimilate the protein. But when you consume protein powder in an isolated form, we don't have the fat and we don't have the enzymes and we don't have, everything, all those cofactors that come along with the real food to help us digest it. And that's why you see people running to the bathroom 30 minutes after they have a protein shake, because it's coming out the other end, because you can't digest it, you can't assimilate it, you can't metabolize it. And, it's really just a waste of time. So real food options is a much better way.
Yeah, just on that protein one, because I'm interested to hear you talk more about how that evolved for you and what that looked for you in training. But a lot of people listening to this would be thinking, oh, shit, I drink a protein shake. If you have a good quality grass-fed whey protein, as an example, mm-hmm. or if they're plant-based, a good quality organic plant-based protein powder, and you have it with other good fats and some nuts and seeds and have it like that, is that going to be more beneficial? Is it more likely that they can absorb it then?
They might be able to absorb it, but I still don't like what else comes in those protein powders. Most of the times there's colorings and flavorings and some sort of preservatives or, something that's chemically made.
Mm.
And the processing that goes behind that as well leaves me questioning whether I really want to put that in, because that is ultimately a dead source of food. Because of the processing. Mm. So, when we talk about food is energy and information, and it's alive. Real food is live, right? Apple will rot or banana will rot. That it's got life force. And, things that have been highly processed is dead, which means we're going to spend energy trying to digest that. So it's going to give us – we're going to spend energy rather than it give us energy. Mm. So for me now, I wouldn't have protein powders. I'd have more of a collagen supplement because that's we're built from collagen, our skin, our connective tissues. It's got the amino – profiles that we need. So the last few years of my career, I after training, I had a collagen supplement rather than a protein supplement, which was a little bit cleaner. It's still a little bit processed, but.
And it's like a top up. It's not a reliance, right?
Exactly.
So some people are using these powders as a reliance. That's their main fuel source.
Yep.
Whereas you're, say, 95% of the time, you're getting all your nutrients and your protein and everything from these whole food sources, and you're topping up with a collagen powder or something like that, as opposed to relying on it.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's a supplement rather than relying on that as a food source. Mm. It's just something extra that my body can use to keep my connective tissues, my skin, everything healthier. Collagen's also good for the gut as well. So using it in that way rather than, like you said, as the main source.
So what were you using then what were some really go-to foods for you to fuel? Because rugby league is a pretty demanding sport. You need to be strong, fast, fit, agile, and obviously you're going to be consuming a lot of nutrition. What were your go-tos? Probably pizza back in the day when you were playing at the Roosters early days. Pizza and pasta in Italian.
Little story. I think I played my 200th game for the Titans, and I always used to have pasta before the game. I'd have pasta the night before. I got a carb load, right? This is the thought back then. You need the carb load so you've got energy for the game. Pasta that night. Then I'd have the leftover pasta 2 hours before I'd go to the game. And this particular game, I got someone landed on my eye socket and fractured my eye socket and blew out the back. And I wasn't concussed, but I was vomiting from the pain. And I remember I come off the field and I vomited in the change rooms, and it was all the pasta just there come up. And I just thought, why am I eating it? I haven't digested that. It's all still in a whole form. It's not giving me – it's making me heavy. So that was like a bit of a light bulb moment where I'm like, this is not the way to eat for performance.
Mm-hmm.
So that was when I started to also look down, you know, different avenues. And fast forward to when I was playing in England, I wouldn't eat. I'd eat if we were playing an 8 o'clock night game, which we'd play over there. 8 p.m. was the main time. I would have a big breakfast and I'd load up on eggs, nice piece of sourdough, you know, avocado, high protein, high fat, like really load that up. And then I would have a really light sort of lunch and then I'd have a bone broth 4 hours before I played, something that I could really easily digest, give me everything that I need, and then I wouldn't eat until after. In actual fact, because we were in England and traveling on buses and they used to give you pizza after the game, I wouldn't even eat. I'd either bring something from home to eat or I'd just fast and then eat the next morning.
Wow.
And I didn't feel I had a drop off in energy or anything like that. When you load up on, you know, good quality protein and fats, it's going to give you sustained energy. And I felt that I had loads of energy going into the game.
It's a big reversal, isn't it, really, with what we think we need to do to load, preload and postload. It's a big mindset shift for people. Why do you think we're in this situation where it's kind of the opposite? And to hear that, even for me to say, wow, and I think about I train better fasted and the way that I fuel is very, very different to whatever I used to do and the way that my athletes used to fuel as well. But why are we in this kind of dynamic of, you know, eating heavy carbs, the carb loading, the recovery foods and using what we use, not just in high-performance sport but for like the weekend warrior type person as well?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's outdated information that has just been not challenged enough through the dietitians and passed down. Mm-hmm. I think it's easier to go along with the norm or what's known than actually challenge it and ask better questions as to, is this working? And I find even when I was playing, the dietitians that we had were telling us that. So when young guys come into that system, they don't know any better and they think we're getting access to the best and we've got dietitians telling us that we do need the carb load, then, you know, it comes down to education. But, yeah, but why is it like that? I don't know whether it's a, you know, corporation profiteering thing I don't know, but what I do know is that athletes should be educated and do their own research as well, do their own education and experiment with themselves a little bit. You know, do they feel better on playing on carbs? Because some players might. Or do they feel better fasted, you know, have a lunch a lot further away from the game and go into the game fasted where you've got all your energy to go to your muscles and perform rather than try and digest. If you're eating too close to the game, your energy is going to digest. Yep. And we can't do two things at once. The body has to digest. That's a higher importance than – so it's going to – you know, it's going to try and digest. But then when we get that fight-flight response, it's like a – it's a tug. Where do I send my energy? If you go into the game slightly faster with some good nutrition on board, then you won't necessarily need that meal right before you.
That before, yeah. My wife, Marie, was a 20K race walker, Swedish national champion, training for the Olympics, and she always had to have brekkie. So it meant she'd get up early because they always compete really early before it got too hot, 20 kilometres. And most, like a lot of her competitors and top competitors were not doing it from the health benefits but just I can't stomach it and choosing not to. And, you know, getting through 20 kilometres of race walking at a very high speed, like faster than I can run that distance. So very, very grueling and demanding on the body in what you would say is a fasted state.
Yep.
And I think it's like what you said is really good. So if we switch gears for everyone that's listening that's not an athlete and we go into everyday life, that feeling piece I think is really crucial, like what you said, getting people to become hyper aware of how do you feel when you have that protein powder or how do you feel if you're having – if anyone's listening and having pre-workout. Actually, what do you want to say to that? Pre-workout drinks that are
– pre-workouts. They're just – We don't need them. Yeah. We don't need them. If you need
open up the bin now.
If you need a pre-workout to have energy to go and do your workout, then you're doing something wrong. You know, yep. your nutrition is wrong. And then look at that.
Or maybe you've got toddlers that are waking you up several times at night.
Yep.
However, my pre-workout, I'm not saying that everyone should have coffee, but I'll have a coffee. But often I'm going to work out because I know that I need an energy shift. And I'm like, I don't – this morning was a prime example. I don't really have the energy. I'm flat, and that's why I'm training.
Yep.
Doing my mobility warm-up, easing into things because I know there's going to be a neurochemical shift and a hormonal shift, and then I feel better.
Exactly right.
So the pre-workout is to kind of – numb, like, or just disassociate yourself from how you're actually feeling because you want this massive energy kick to get you through it, as opposed to knowing actually if you once you move, you'll generate energy.
That's right. It will give you energy.
Yeah.
When you move, you will get energy. And it's just, like you said, it's that mindset shift. Don't go for the pre-workout. Ease yourself into it and you will get a natural chemical shift that will give you a boost of energy. You know, I don't mind people who have coffee to get a little bit of a pick-me-up, but you know, I like to have coffee tied up with a little bit of fat so you get a sustained release of energy rather than, you know, your quick spike and then
yep. I have my butter coffees every morning.
Yeah,
love it.
And it's just something like that, you know, whether it's butter or, you know, full fat cream or whatever it is, just tie it up, you know, ghee or whatever it is, tie it up with some fat so you can get that nice sustained energy and you're not going to get a drop and then want to go for another cup.
Yeah, absolutely. I should probably explain to all the listeners that it wasn't just your research that you did in your playing days and decided to make some changes. You've actually gone on now, transitioned after your career. You are a holistic health coach and do corrective exercise and work with people, probably more non-athletes than athletes, am I correct?
Yeah.
And helping them in this whole domain. So what you're speaking about comes from then a lot of study and certifications and as well as lived experience, which I think is awesome. And what I'd love to hear from you is about the Czech Institute training that you did and kind of the pillars there and what that looks like in the work that you do now with people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, as you said, I went through, you know, a good 3 years of study post rugby league career, but also doing my own research and doing lots of other courses, like always ongoing, like, you know, doing some another different courses at the moment just to keep ahead of the curve and where I see, you know, the fitness industry and the health industry is always changing and, you know, you got to keep up with it. Otherwise you get left behind. And so I went on and did some study through the Czech Institute, Paul Czech in the US, as an institute where it's corrective exercise, holistic lifestyle coaching, and a whole array of different courses that you can go through that institute. And I stepped through, you know, 3 years of that and just, I guess, solidified everything that I was implementing in my life prior to that and how those two really aligned with what I found to work in everyday life and with what he was teaching. And it was just a good, synergy there that worked well. It was working for me. He was teaching the same thing, which meant it almost gave me that, you know, stamp of authority that I'm on the right path sort of thing.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And now I, you know, and that works all around six pillars of health and they are, you know, mindset, breathing, hydration, nutrition, sleep, and exercise. And they're the six, I guess, lifestyle factors that influence whether we are going to be truly healthy and live a life full of, you know, energy and health or whether you're going to start to, you know, go down the route of, you know, disease and things like that. And, I try and teach clients those six pillars and how they're all integrated and how if you only try and live one or two of those, you know, like most people exercising like crazy, you know, and, you know, they sacrifice their sleep because work and family life. And so they're not sleeping enough. but they're exercising, but then they got too much cortisol and they're stressed and, you know, we're out of balance. You know, if you're not sleeping enough and letting the body, regenerate and rejuvenate and heal, then, you know, we're out of balance. So every one of them will affect any one of the others.
Mm.
So having a balanced life across all six pillars is true health.
And the first one you said was mindset.
Yeah.
What's a kind of a key starting point for people to think about when it comes to their mindset and when we think about health and healthy mindset?
Yeah, so mindset is when I talk about the totem pole, the hierarchy of importance to survival. And our mindset is right at the top, our psyche,
mm-hmm.
because that can override and it can influence everything else. So the way –
meaning like the way that you think affects how you feel, which exactly. affects how you act and
yes.
behave. And
yeah, exactly. So you can – yeah, exactly what you said. How we think is how we feel is how we act. And if we are thinking negative thoughts all the time, then we're going to start to feel, you know, the emotions of negativity and all the, you know, emotions that go along with that. And then you're not going to act in accordance with your higher self or your, you know, what you want to achieve. So if we get into that negative cycle, that negative loop, then our thoughts will create our emotions, which will create our actions. And you get into a negative cycle and all of a sudden you're in a downward spiral. And it's being consciously aware that our thoughts, our body will always follow the mind. So our thoughts are number one. If we can start to think more positive and focus on the outcome we want, then we will move into a better feeling and better emotions, which will then give us that energy to act upon them.
With the awareness piece, what do you find with people that you work with? Are they more aware of their behaviors that are out of alignment, or are they more aware of negative thought patterns that they have, or are they more aware of how they're feeling and that they don't feel very well, or they feel stressed, or they feel disempowered, or they feel something? What
I think it's the feeling piece that they're more in tune with, because mm-hmm. people feel the emotions of not, you know, feeling whatever it is, that's sad, you know, negative.
Yep. Anxious, depressed.
All those feelings. So it's really easy to get caught up in them because they're the emotions we're feeling. And to try and just bring someone's awareness to, okay, your thoughts will affect those feelings and emotions, which will then affect the action. So it's like just trying to bring them back to, all right, what are you thinking? What are you telling yourself? What's the story that you're telling yourself? Mm-hmm. And that might be a subconscious program that has been imprinted on them from 2 years old that was not pushed or was just imprinted by family, friends, teachers, whatever. You know, those first 7 years is where we get
formative years.
Yeah.
We're just downloading everything.
It's so important. And that builds our subconscious. So those subconscious beliefs or those paradigms that we run, some people are unaware of them and they just sit there in the background and they're what actually run their life. So if we can make them aware of that, then we can start to shift and they can see that what they're doing is not in alignment with where they want to go. Mm. We can start to challenge that and start to talk to them about the mindset and what to think so they can feel better and so on.
It's a real aha moment, like a paradigm shift for some people when they haven't linked the way you think affects how you feel, which affects how you behave, and it's this cycle.
Yep.
And I love explaining to people, I've got this kind of energy conditions quadrant, I call it too, because what I want people to understand too is how it makes you feel and how you can perform and do certain things in life. So in this quadrant, we've got the empowering side and the disempowering. And on the disempowering, as an example, might be things like anger, resentment, frustration. They're not right or wrong. It's just disempowering. And it's okay to feel those things. It's quite natural. But to operate from that space and to choose to ruminate in the thoughts or doing whatever and continue operating. But there was some studies done years ago, and I've kind of use that a little bit through my own learnings of, you can still get things done from a place of anger and frustration. Like you can still parent, you can still coach, you can still play from anger and frustration, but you're only able to tap into about 60% of your capacity. So your intuition, your skills, your knowledge, your memory, everything like that. So you can still get shit done.
Yep.
But you're actually limiting your capacity. And you'll know it from a neuro perspective, like you're shunting neural pathways and operating more from that amygdala fear-based as opposed to creativity, responsive, rational, logical part. And then just understanding that the choices that we make internally, this is why I love gratitude, like, and having the attitude of gratitude, but as a tool of just shifting then from that negative and frustration to use a gratitude to shift onto that empowering side of the quadrant, or what's even better than that, because it's really hard to outthink a thinking problem. So sometimes using language to outpower language, the breath and the movement to help you shift from one emotion to the next. So on that same mindset, and then how the breath being another one on the next one on the totem pole, how do you use the breathing to support the mindset and the emotional agility piece or the emotional intelligence piece?
Yeah, you're so right there in everything you're saying. That's great stuff. But so breathing is one of the biggest, I guess, fundamental pillars that I would start on, because most people have an inverted breathing pattern and they're just very chesty with their breath.
So is that what inverted means?
Yeah.
Chest as opposed to diaphragm?
Yeah, exactly right. So they're breathing really shallow in their chest rather than down into their diaphragm. And you probably know the stats on this, but when we breathe into our diaphragm, we get 16 times more oxygen into the body. You know, it helps pump the heart because it's the lining of the diaphragm's attached to the pericardium, the lining of the heart. So that when we breathe down, it helps pump the heart. That works 50% less. So just huge effects on the body.
Just to elaborate on that, what you're saying there is the heart works 50% less.
That's
so people
right.
are listening,
yes.
Which then means the heart is actually getting 15 times more oxygen around the body.
Working
50% less.
Yeah, which is huge. Like you take 16 times more oxygen or 15 times more oxygen in the body, that's huge. But then when the heart's working 50% less for that oxygen, you get massive shift. Massive, you know, the oxygenation of the cells and the muscles, and you know, it can change people's, you know, the anxiety levels and just everything like
huge.
That. It's just massive.
The amount of guys that I've got off blood pressure medication by teaching them nostril and diaphragm breathing.
Yeah.
For that science.
Yeah, that's exactly
that's
right.
What it is.
And like you said, the nostril breathing is huge. Most people but a lot of people are mouth breathers. And that just stimulates the fight or flight response, activates cortisol, and then all of a sudden we've got adrenaline and cortisol flying around. That suppresses melatonin, and then all of a sudden someone can't sleep. But it comes back to the 25,000 breaths a day that we take through our mouth rather than through our nose. The nose will activate the parasympathetic. It's got, you know, the filter, its mechanism to filter the air as we go through the nose. If we breathe through our mouth, that just goes straight into the system. So there's so much to the breath by just slowing down and teaching someone how to breathe through the nose, silent and slow, so that you activate the diaphragm and then we get, you know, all those effects. So that's something that I start with a lot of clients, because the breathing is so important. And then compare that with, like you said, the mindset piece. And if you just get them, if they're in that negative loop, you can just get them to lay down and just concentrate on the breath. You know, they can do, there's all sorts of breath work techniques, but pick one and it just brings your awareness to breathing in and out. And if you, that brings you to the now, right?
To the present.
The present.
The decisions you make from the present moment, as opposed to caught up in the anxiousness or the stress or the doubt, the worry, the concern, the frustration.
Yep.
Breathing just brings you back to present. And from that present moment, you can make whatever decision. You can go back to the frustration. You can go back to the fear. But from that state, you're generally going to make a bit of a different decision.
Yep.
So that's that link that you're talking about with thoughts, feelings, behaviors too, because the behavior is the action that they take from that space.
Yes.
And they're going to make a different decision because they're going to feel differently, calm, content, connected, present, as opposed to frustrated, anxious, mind out going out there, and then the mindsets of that into the disempowering, the negativity and the doubt, and then the mindsets of kind of like a trust, I guess, and an empowered mindset as opposed to disempowered.
So good, isn't it? Like it's just...
Oh, this shit blows my mind. I love it. I love it. But you must love it too when you work with people and you can just see if you just make this little shift, that little micro change can give you a quantum leap.
Yeah.
Like the little cog turn.
And when the penny drops for them, it then you can see that shift, you know.
Mm.
And, yeah, and then hopefully they can go on from there and yeah.
You empower them.
Yeah.
We'll just ask me or our podcast producer to go back and look at all the footage. I'm pretty sure I've only been nose breathing and diaphragm. If I had my mouth open while he was talking and if my chest was moving, I'm not practicing what I preach. But that's what I've trained myself to, and you'll be the same, that that's what I say to people. It's not just about while you're with the coach. Like don't go and see Mark and then just breathe properly there.
Yeah, exactly.
And this goes back into the sport analogy as well. Like you'll turn up and train the same amount as everyone else. It's not about what you do at training. It's about what you do in between that either enhances or minimizes what you're going to get from that training session.
And that's the biggest thing that I tried to get across to the younger players when, especially when I was in England, you know, I was much older than most of them. And we all work hard at training. That's easy. You go there to work hard and get better. But what you do away from the field, that's what counts. Mm. You know, you're talking, what, you know, athletes are looking for the 1% edge in the gym and all this. You change your nutrition, your sleeping habits, your mindset, and make sure you're hydrated effectively, you're going to get 10% increases, not these 1% increases that you try and get in the gym. Like, it's huge. The lifestyle piece away from the athlete, it makes all the difference. And I tried to teach this to, you know, some of the guys when I come back. And, you know, some get it, some don't. And, you know, that's their path and that's their journey. But if you can help them understand that what they do away from training has a significant impact on how they're going to turn up the next day to train, how they're going to turn up the day after that, how they're going to recover and how then they're going to play with the energy and feeling better, like, If I was an athlete today, that's where I'd focus a lot more of my time because it makes a bigger impact. You don't get better from training. You get better from the recovery. How quickly you can recover is then going to tell you how much better you can improve when you train.
The 21-year-old Mark, do you reckon you would have listened to a 37-year-old at that age trying to tell you that?
Pretty bulletproof at that age, aren't you? but that's the issue. Everyone thinks that
you're bulletproof until you're not.
Yeah, everyone thinks that's going to last forever.
Mm.
But if you can teach a young athlete that what they do at 20, 21 is going to give them 5-10 years on their career because their body's going to be, you know, built better, stronger, more energy, recover faster, then that's going to improve their longevity in the sport, whatever that is. You know, that's huge. But it's getting that point across. And some people are open to it and some aren't.
Yeah. When we think about that philosophy of it's more about what you do in between than at the session, what about to everyone listening who's not an athlete, they might do some movement and exercise. Okay, let's say they do movement and exercise. Yep. How does that relate to us everyday people that aren't trying to be athletes? Because I love my training and movement and exercise, but I'm not training for anything. I don't have a competition coming up or anything like that. So there'll be a lot of people listening like that.
Yeah, but that's fine. You want to optimize your health, right? So you want to make sure that when movement is essential to being healthy and having longevity. So movement's fine, whatever movement that is, but can you couple that with, you know, good nutrition afterwards so your body feels nourished? Can you make sure that you go into that training session well hydrated, with a bit of salt in the water or lemon or whatever it is? And can you make sure that you prioritize your sleep after that night so then you can wake up the next morning and be ready to go for work or whatever it is that you're doing? So just because you're not an athlete doesn't mean we don't want to perform at our best. You know, performance means different things to different people. You know, you've got a high-flying CEO. He needs to be mentally alert and on, and he needs to perform in his role. That's different to mine as an athlete or yours as a coach. But essentially, performance and being at your best is the same. We still need to optimize those six pillars, whether you're an athlete or not. those pillars and optimizing and balancing all them are going to give you as the coach the more energy to, you know, inspire your clients, or the CEO is going to be have more mental clarity so he can work quicker and bang out whatever he needs to be. So it's all relative to you as the individual and what you're doing and what you want to optimize.
Yeah, and I think that's beautiful point to really highlight for everyone listening. The stay-at-home mum or the elite athlete, those pillars are applicable to all of us. And when we can prioritize those and value those and make improvements in each of those areas, that's living – would you say that's living holistically or that's living optimally?
Well, it can be both. It could be living in alignment with your values as well. Like we need to have some sort of values and morals that you want to live by. I find that, you know, if you don't have morals and values, then the choices we make are just, you know, you don't know where you're going, right? So if you make choices that are in alignment with your values, morals and ethics, then you're going in the right path. And you can – that makes making choices a lot easier.
Yeah, explain that a little bit, because I'm huge on that and I've navigated my life based on that. But how do you speak that to people?
Yeah, so we should essentially sit down and have, I guess, values, morals and ethics in all areas of our life, whether that be family, relationships, work, fitness, whatever it is. So have your essentially the pillars, all the six pillars. You can have you can sit down and write, you know, your values in every area, and then have them. Make sure you live by them, because that's something that has to be true to you. You know, you can't have your coach tell you what your values are. That's something you got to sit with yourself and go, all right, what are my values around family and my boys or kids, my wife? Is it making sure that I can pick them up from school, or I'm there on the weekends for them, or whatever it is, you know? And same with nutrition. My values around nutrition is only eat organically. And that's something that it's just, it's now ingrained in me. I would never go to the shops and not buy organic unless it's absolutely, you know, necessary. But
do they do organic meat pies yet?
My wife does. She makes her own.
There you go. Put her details in the show notes. That's it.
So, yeah, sitting down and understanding what your values are in each area and then making decisions every day is easy then, because that should be in the back of your mind. So if you go to the shops and you got the prepackaged pizza, or you've got, you know, a organic whole food option, what's in alignment with my value? Okay, that's easy. It's an easy decision. And you can do that in every area of your life. And that will take you in the direction that you ultimately want to go.
What do you say to people who don't have, if people map out their top 3 to 5 core values, so to say, and they don't have health as one of those values? What does that highlight to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. It sort of depends on what their other core values were in what area, like if it was business or finances, or, you know, you can't give from an empty cup. You know, going back to the mother of 4 kids, like they sacrifice themselves so often for their kids, and, you know, trying to be the best mother they can, but they neglect their own health. You know, and it's the same with that. If they don't have health as one of their, you know, values, then you're going to get to a stage where you're burnt out, and you're going to get sick, and you're going to have some sort of disease in the body. So health needs to be one of your priorities, because then you can live a longer, healthier, better life.
So if it's not a top core value, like you and I, and we live it, we breathe it, we teach it, we coach it, and I don't expect other people to have health in that same kind of way, but to prioritize it and focus on it and give it that attention, well, priority is the optimal word there,
yep.
Just to prioritize your health, because that will allow you to flourish in all your other areas. That'll allow you to live more in alignment with those values.
Yeah, exactly right. Like if they don't have it as one of their core values or a priority in their core values, then I would just challenge them and ask them where are they going in their life, because they're going to hit a point where health is going to be their top priority and not in a good way.
Mm.
It's going to hit them.
You've got to prioritize and it then to catch up.
You're going to have to, you're going to be in hospital, you're going to have some sort of disease or illness or something is going to hit you and stop you. And then all of a sudden that then comes to the forefront and not by choice, but by pure, this is what's happened. It is now my main focus because I have to go and get treatment, get healthy, get whatever it is.
Mm.
So by virtue, it comes to the forefront and becomes their top priority, but in the negative way. Rather than prioritize your health at the start, so then it never pops up, you're going to live a healthier life. And then you can balance the rest of them. Yeah. So,
can you balance or have harmony in those six pillars and still be a high achiever and do well in your business or career?
100%. Yeah. You'll actually get better in your business and your career because you're gonna feel better, you're gonna have more energy, and you're gonna be more clarity in what you're doing. And I find when you have great balance in all six of those pillars, life is effortlessness. It happens, and you're in flow, and you know it becomes, it's not so push. Yeah, it becomes easier.
I ask that question not for me, because I think you're the same as me, where we work with people that have achieved well in business or career and neglected some of yep. or several of those pillars, and they get to that point where they realize, oh shit. But I also see people who haven't neglected. So I've seen the reversal yep. and I work in the reversal a lot, but I'm super inspired by it and I focus on these people. These are the people that I'm inspired by in business and that have successful careers who have maintained their health and their well-being and their family values and achieved that high level of success, whatever success is to them. I'm not inspired by the people who burn themselves out and neglect themselves. And I say it from a place not of judgment, but a place of kind of compassion and awareness that their success in business or career doesn't inspire me when they've neglected all of that. But I love working with that caliber of people too, to go, you know, that energy and that drive that you've put behind that.
Yeah.
Imagine if we put that into these areas of life, how the shift that you can make and how that will pan out differently.
Yeah, so true. That's, it's great to have those clients that you can just inspire you. That's the way you want them to go. It's cool.
I want to shift gears a little bit now. Before I do, though, you've mentioned your wife, Milena, before, and she's a functional nutrition coach. And I just want to give a shout out to her because the food that you talked about, I've experienced it several times. I use her, hire the space at your place and run my workshops out there, and she provides just the most delicious, nutritious, and it's all organic, all locally sourced, made with pure love with her. But that's what I love about bringing it in. You know, I do these workshops and it's physical, mental, breath work, things like that, and then we're connecting at the end of it over this really delicious, nutritious food, so all the guys can see how we can bring it into our environment and learn from it. And I love questioning her, where did that ingredient come from? Yeah. Why is that fat better than that one? And why have you used this? And it's just a really good way for people to learn about it.
Yeah, she's got a great ability to just bring people together with food the delicious, nourishing meals that she provides is just like, I'm spoiled. We're spoiled. The boys are spoiled. Like every meal is not just a normal meal. It's just, that's how she shares love and She loves that sort of the feeling we get when we can sit down to a nice meal, and that's her thing. And
given that you finish your career really strong and you focus on your health pillars and everything, it doesn't mean, like, that word bulletproof came up, right? It doesn't mean that we won't experience challenges in our life. And something that you've started sharing a bit more on your Instagram around supporting yourself through some back issues that you have had.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about that, like where you're at in regards to that and what it's taught you and where things are heading with this.
Exactly right. No one's ever bulletproof, and you know, I've been struck down with a back issue, which thankfully throughout my career I never really had. Like, I had little back pain, but never serious back issues like my brother did or anything like that. And I got through 19 years of a career not missing many games and playing over 400 games. So to then retire and just – I sort of just let my body – I said I'm just going to let my body heal and recover from copping a beating for so many years. Mm. And I probably – was it – it's 3.5 years on since I retired, I'd say probably. And, yeah, just around Christmas time I just started getting these back issues that started – like increasingly got worse and – sort of shifted me off my center, and I was, you know, that's the body's way of getting away from pain. And it just, I tried to do the things that I know around, you know, corrective exercise and things, but it just wasn't shifting. And then I woke up one day with an awful pain in my glute and down my ITB, like this burning, awful nerve pain, like just. I'm pretty good with pain and I can cope with pain, but this buckled me. Like it had just had me down on the ground, and I was like, this is not right. So I, you know, knowing what I know, I jumped on it pretty quickly. I got some scans and it showed a nerve impingement, nerve root impingement at L3, which has given me significant pain. And so the pain started the morning I got up. The next morning it was a bit tingly and my legs started going numb. And then the day after, weakness set in. So I couldn't step up steps and my leg was buckling under me. So I was losing function of that leg. So I knew it was quite serious that I had to jump on it pretty quickly. So MRI showed that the nerve root was impinged. They thought just a cortisone injection could sort of flush that out and release it, because usually at that L3 level, it's usually L5 S1 or L4 L5, but L3 is not as common. Anyway, that didn't do anything. I had the cortisol and they said that can take up to 5 days of work, and I'm just in pain, nothing. So then I went on to see a neurosurgeon, and he got another MRI done because he said he wasn't happy with the quality, it wasn't clear enough. So we had one done under dye, so just to enhance the imaging. And, yeah, it showed a significant nerve root impingement in a far lateral position, which the surgeon said to me is very rare. He probably operated on 10 times in his career. So he said it's a very rare impingement, and he recommended surgery. And I obviously didn't want surgery. It's not something I'd, you know, choose to do, but after consulting a few people that I, you know, I regard highly in my industry, that was the best option. Otherwise, the longer that nerve root stays impinged, then the more chance you got of having permanent damage. You know, nerves are very sensitive. So I went in and had surgery, and they took out a significant chunk of disky material or whatever it was. It was 2 centimeters worth of material that was compressing the nerve. And I think we're 4 weeks from surgery today. And I'm very frustrated that I have been, because I may have pushed it a little bit too much with, you know, I don't like to sit still and lay on my back, or, you know, so, I'll, you know, I've got 4 boys. It's just things need doing. So I think maybe the first couple of weeks I may have done a little bit too much, where I should have been laid up and I was walking around and things like that. But I think I irritated the nerve slightly, and now I'm sort of got pain again, which is not ideal. But so now I'm just trying to reduce that and step it back a little bit and, try and get that under control. I go back and see the surgeon in a week and a half, and we're just going to – see what happens there. But it has been a very frustrating time, and we talk about the mindset, and, you know, I'm actually now in this cycle of like a little bit of anger, frustration, and, you know, some negative thoughts and everything. You know, it is really difficult. It's easier to say than it is to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm now experiencing that firsthand. So as a coach, I guess it makes me understand a little bit more from the other side of the fence, and which will make me a better coach in the end, and how it's easier to say it than it is to do it. And I'm now trying to get into that cycle of, all right, I can change the way I'm feeling. Even though I'm in pain, I can try and use that mindset to change those emotions, feelings, and that cycle. So I'm being challenged with that at the moment.
It'll make you a better coach.
Yeah, 100%. And but yeah, like, you know, I thought, I didn't think I was bulletproof. I just, you know, I optimized those things in every area. But for whatever reason, this is my journey and what's happened, and I now have to go through that, which will, you know, I'm sure it'll, you know, I'll get growth and life experience out of this that I can share and help others with. But it has been a frustrating, challenging time over the last, you know, couple of months, that's for sure.
Do you get more frustrated at not being able to do things actively, or do you get frustrated at not being able to heal something naturally with all your beliefs and your shifts?
Yeah, good question. Bit of both. Definitely frustrated that I can't do what I want to do. And, like, you know, we live on property and there's lots to do out there. You've got to keep on top of it. And thankfully my wife is doing most of it and my boys help out. But, you know, that's a challenge because I want to be able to do that and keep it all looking good, you know, and to train as well and you know, get back and feel like I'm moving again. That's been challenging. I've dropped a heap of muscle mass and just by not being able to do anything, and that's challenging me because I've never had problem with you know, losing weight, putting weight on. I've always been pretty stable, but yeah, the other side has challenged me as well. It's a tough one. It's a tough one because, I want to do everything as natural as possible, and then I've put off the surgery an extra week to try and see if everything I was doing would help it somewhat. And in the end, sometimes surgery is the best option because you need function of your leg and you don't want that long term. So in the end, I just surrendered that and said, yes, everyone I've spoken to says surgery is the best option. And then you can optimize, you can go back after that, you can go back to doing everything naturally as much as possible to heal and get through it. And so that's where I'm at now. Yeah, you know, beautiful. Optimizing my nutrition, you know, making sure that I'm well hydrated, that I'm sleep at the moment is being
impacted
by the pain that wakes me up two, three times a night where I've got to get out of bed. So I'm a little bit concerned about that because sleep is so important to healing. So I'm just trying to down-regulate that inflammation enough where I can get a full night's sleep. So just doing everything I can to, you know, along those six pillars. And like I said, that mindset piece is challenging me a little bit because I've always been quite positive. But when you're in pain and when it's different. You got to get your head right.
Do you feel like your identity has been challenged?
Maybe a little bit. Maybe because, you know, being a corrective exercise coach and now I'm going through this where this – I shouldn't be on the receiving end of this because I teach people how to get out of pain, how to improve any imbalances, and here I am having to have surgery. So I did that – went through my head, yeah, definitely. Mm. And
do you feel any shame about that?
No, I wouldn't say shame. I think I sort of come to grips with it now. You know, not many people have gone through 19 years of a physical sport like I have and come out with no issues or relatively no issues. And this could be, you know, whether this was an accumulation of a weakening disc over all that time, and then because I haven't trained as much and kept myself as strong as I did training every day, and then, you know, the disc just, you know, I got that sequestered disc, or, you know, that's a possibility, you know, because not one thing I did, nothing, there wasn't just one issue.
That wasn't like you fell and twisted or anything like that.
Yeah, so it just come on sort of gradually, which for me was a bit weird. But these things can happen if that disc wall has been compromised for years and now I'm not as strong, and then something, just the slightest movement could have done it. Yeah, so I did. It did cross my head, and I'm like, well, I'm the one that's supposed to be, you know, fit, healthy, and teaching people. But you can't really look at it like that, I guess. You got to, you know, for me now, is it, what's this going to teach me so I can be a better coach? You know, how, you know, and like I said, the mindset thing is more challenging. It's easier to say than do, and I can now have that lived experience where I can help them with how I got through it, and yeah, so I think this is going to make me a better coach.
It's an embodied experience for the mindset and the emotional stuff, like what you've been explaining, and thank you for sharing it from that perspective too. And it's also a, maybe people then see you not just as a former elite athlete that does the corrective exercise and they trust you for that, but they see you go through this and on the other side and everything that you've learned. So they know that you have an embodied experience of pain.
Yep.
And you're not just speaking to, oh, I know you. It's like, oh, I feel you. Mm. Like, I get it. I understand how this challenges you. Yep. So that can actually make people feel more connected to you. And not that it would be a trust issue, but just trust that you are connected to them through their pain journey. Mm.
Yeah, exactly right. And, so hopefully if that's what I'm going to gain from this experience, then that's going to be a positive moving forward. You know, you've got to always look at that positive side of it as much as possible.
Yeah, that empowering positive mindset.
Yeah.
I'm taking a sip of water here, and it's very high quality water.
I hope so.
You've mentioned hydration as one of the pillars.
Yep.
Give us a brief of what quality hydration looks like compared to what most of us might think that it is, if we're practicing good hydration.
Yeah, okay. So water's a fascinating thing, isn't it? Like, there's so much to water that we know, and there's so much we still don't know about water. You know, we are, you know, 75-80% water. You know, at a molecular level, we're 90-95% water. And, you know, so to think that people are not drinking enough water, it's what we're built from, it's what we're made up of. So, you know, if people aren't drinking enough water, then how can we be healthy if we're made up of 90% water? You know what I mean? So, you know, when it comes to hydration, I think the mineral content of our water is very important. I always tell my clients that they should be putting a pinch of good quality sea salt in their water, just to add minerals back in. Most people a lot of people use filters that, you know, especially the reverse osmosis filters, that takes out all the mineral content of the water. So if you're drinking reverse osmosis water, you want to remineralize that water with some good quality sea salt and something of that nature, because we need minerals for the body, for our cells to absorb that hydration or that water.
What about comparatively to, so back in my naive days, I used to, when I travelled to Asia, and I used to hate buying bottled water, because I'd say, in Australia you can drink out of the tap, like tap water, and we grew up on tap water out west, where it would be just like worse than in around here. But for those who, and it was me for most of my life, would drink tap water unknowingly, what's the consequences? Yeah, or
it still shocks me that people think tap water is okay to drink. Like, and
so tell us why it's not, because there'll be a lot of people listening right now that will go, hang on, what do you mean?
Like, the amount of chlorine and things that go in the water just for them to make it safe to drink. Like, and then the fluoride they add in, and yes, all these chemicals that go in to make this water drinkable and safe is supposed to be healthy for us. It's not. Water in nature is running, and it's got minerals, but it shouldn't be. We shouldn't have to add chlorine to kill things off, or add fluoride to the water. You know, that's one of the most toxic chemicals that we have on the planet.
You know, fluoride?
Yeah, fluoride.
And why do they put it in our toothpaste then? Isn't it good for our teeth?
They say fluoride's good for your teeth. But it's not. It's actually a derivative from World War II and the chemical industries that it's so expensive to get rid of. They've somewhat brainwashed everyone to think that it's okay to put in there in our water because it's good for our teeth. And, you know, there's lots of research out there on this. I'm not just making this up. And I would encourage everyone to look into it and do their own research, because fluoride in our water is toxic to the body. It will calcify the pineal gland in our brain, and it will do lots of other negative things to our body. So making sure that we get rid of these chemicals, and not just the chemicals they put in to treat the water, but all the pesticides, herbicides, fungicides that the industrial that are just all washed in into the water system, and not to mention all the pharmaceutical drugs. And there's so many, hundreds and thousands of different chemicals that is in our water today, in our water system today. And that's why it's so imperative that we have a good quality filtration system. If you're going to drink tap water, it needs to be filtered. And if you want to be healthy, then you have to be drinking good quality water. It's that is just rule number one, really. Like,
and so that's why it's one of the pillars from what you, that hydration is a separate pillar to anything else, because that's how important it is.
Exactly right. Yep. And when I say add a pinch of salt into the water, you know, that's the crystalline structure of the water that helps the body absorb it at a cellular level. It helps hydrate you at a cellular level, and not to mention the minerals that come. You know, I like using Celtic sea salt, or a really good quality handcrafted salt. Gives us all the minerals that we need. We're so mineral deficient today because our soil is so mineral deficient. And if our soils, if they keep farming in this industrialized way, the soil is going to be. We're losing the topsoil. In this, not in this country, but all over the world. And we need to get that biodiversity back in the soil so we can get more nutrients back in our food, because the foods today are nutrient deficient because the soil is so dead. It's been sprayed with Roundup and, glyphosate, that is one of the worst chemicals for our health. You know, it destroys our microbiome, kills bacteria, kills the soil, and it's a water-soluble thing. So now we have it in the rain, we have it in our creeks and river systems, because it just gets, and it's almost impossible to get rid of. And the amount of tons and tons that they spray on our food system today is shocking. And how we haven't outlawed that in this country is I don't know how.
Yeah, it's scary. One of the first times I was out on your property, and I said, "Oh, can you drink the water? Because it's clear and it's flowing." It was not long after we got back from Sweden, because over there where we were living, it's literally the creeks. There's definitely areas where farm stuff can rush into it, but a lot of the hills around, and then there's heaps of natural springs. Yeah, and where we were living for the last 6 months, it was on the natural spring. Like, you turn the tap on and that's a natural spring water coming through. There's nothing added
better.
To that.
Nothing better.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's still, that was up in the country, and but just knowing that those pockets, there is those pockets around, but understanding that the natural kind of spring water and the flow, like you said, and it generates energy for the movement over the rocks, and that's what we end up getting, this dead kind of water when we reverse osmosis, taking out the minerals, and then we can get dead water. It's really a complex thing. So to get people curious to go and explore that.
The fact that in nature, when water's running, the structure of water is not H2O. H2O is the purified water that they say that's in a lab. running water in nature, spring water, is H3O2. That's the structure of it. And our body actually has to convert H2O to H3O2 to be absorbed into the cells. And the body does that by using the infrared rays of the sun. So sun exposure is really important to help structure the water that we drink as well. But if we can structure the water before we take it in, and we have a structure unit that converts it from H2O to H3O2, then all of a sudden the body's not using that energy and we can hydrate a lot more effectively because it can go straight into the cells.
I saw you reach for your water bottle when you said that. Does your water bottle there have a structuring unit in it?
Yeah, so this water bottle here is this does structure the water, and it also adds molecular hydrogen to the water, so which is one of the master antioxidants that we have in this planet. And so that hydrogen health water bottle structures the water. So we have the H3O2, and then it also adds a little bit of hydrogen to it, which gives it extra properties for health.
We could go deep. I'm just thinking the next time we get you on, we're going to talk about environmental impacts and toxins and everything, because I think that's a whole nother chat in itself. What would you say to everyone listening that is drinking tap water or hasn't really started the journey around hydration? What's the best starting point for that?
Yeah, best starting point is to get yourself at least a decent quality filter that will take out chlorine, chloramines, fluoride, and all the pesticides, herbicides, and pharmaceuticals, and then add some salt to the water to remineralize it and give it that crystalline structure so we can absorb it. I like to use lemon as well, especially in the morning. Lemon and salt in the water is natural electrolytes from the lemon, minerals from the salt. Rehydrate yourself from the night sleep, because we do sweat and lose quite a bit over the night sleep.
Yeah, it's one of the non-negotiables with everyone I work with is the lemon water and good quality filtered water in the mornings. Another thing that the lemon does is actually helps to flush out toxins that have built up overnight as well. And what about then in terms of a water filter that I could buy from Bunnings and put on the bench compared to a water filter that is connected underneath the sink?
There's a decent above bench filter system that I recommend some clients use at a decent cost. You know, around $700, you can get a above sink option, which will take out pretty much everything.
That's probably very different to the maybe $80 or $90 ones I'm talking about from Bunnings.
Well, that's the thing. So the one you're talking about from Bunnings, no, they don't do much at all. Right. You know, your Brita jug filters, they're a waste of money. They're not doing enough. They don't take out enough, and I wouldn't waste your money on those things. I'd either just save up to get yourself a half-decent filter prioritise it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it comes down to that. When you understand the health effects of drinking tap water and dead water, you know, you will place a priority on it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we buy the under-sink ones and then replace them, the actual filters in there. And when I was traveling a lot, I was using – it wasn't as advanced as that, but I'm going to hit you up and get one of those after. But just a travel one that I could take that had a good filter. It was from the same company, so it was a travel bottle with a filter in it, so you'd have to pour the water through and wait for it to filter through.
Yeah.
But at least then I knew when I was traveling the world that I could have good quality filter on hand.
And they're the things you got to sort of try and find before you do travel, or you know, do a little bit of research around. Hit us up. I'm sure we can give you some options.
Yeah, brilliant. On that kind of philosophy, as we wrap up, so for everyone listening, the unbeatable philosophies are around, you know, to live an unbeatable life doesn't mean that we're bulletproof. Mm. It doesn't mean that we're not going to experience physical challenges, mental challenges, relationship challenges. What it means is that we live a life where we develop tools and strategies and mindsets where we can navigate those challenges so they don't beat us. So we'll still experience in them, but we won't be beaten by them. Like your back, like you're in a deep kind of challenge with that at the moment, but you're doing all the right things and naturally and exploring and from a place of curiosity, which I really love, so that this doesn't beat you. On that kind of philosophy, and we've covered a lot of things, but what would you say are one or two good starting points for people to implement from your perspective to help them design and live their own unbeatable lives?
Yeah, well, to design your own, like, unbeatable life, if you don't have some core values in every pillar, give yourself, you know, some time to sit down and work out what your core values are, because that's going to give you a bit of a roadmap when it comes to making choices in each area. So that'll give you a great starting point to then say, all right, I'm not going to do this, I'll do this. You know what I mean? So that's a good starting point. And then figure out where you're not placing a priority in your life on those six pillars. If you're doing three well and you're not doing the other three well, then just ask yourself the question, what would happen if I did place an importance on all six of those pillars? Mm-hmm. And then sit with that and see, you know.
Can you just repeat the pillars again for everyone?
Yes. Listening? So mindset, breathing, hydration, nutrition, sleep, and exercise. And if you start with those six, obviously there's other areas of life that you want to place importance on, with family, relationship, community and connection, finances, those areas as well. But I find if we start with those six and you get balance in those six, then you will have more clarity around where you want to navigate from there.
Brilliant. Where can people find you online and follow you and keep up to date and reach out if they want to work with you or find out more information? Where's the best place?
Yeah, so my Instagram handle is markminicello_, I think it is. I'm just recently putting out a lot more content around, you know, especially with my back and things like that, and what it is I do with corrective exercise, lifestyle coaching, performance coaching. I've got a website which is mpl.ptenhance.app.
It's a weird one. That's an interesting.
Yeah, I've got to change it, but
I reckon if people Google Mark Minicello website, it'll come up. We'll find it. We'll put it in the show notes.
So I've got a website there which explains what I do, corrective exercise, lifestyle, coaching wise. I just work out here at Burley and little studio there, office and gym, and want to help people live a healthier, you know, pain-free life. And so if you are experiencing any pain or issues like that, then give me a tingle, and happy to have a good chat and see if I can help you out.
Yeah, I've referred several clients onto you because, you know, as people can hear, there's so many overlaps, and we breathe the same air and we sing the same song in regards to a lot of the health pillars. But there's a lot of things that I can't do with my clients that at the level that you can, and I love the referrals, and then their hip and their back pain is not an issue anymore, and coming back to the other physical work that they can actually enhance. So big advocate for what you do, mate.
Yeah, thanks for all your referrals. It is very much appreciated. I'm grateful for the relationship that we have, and we can refer people to each other. It's all in the hope that they can live a happier, healthier life.
Yeah, massively. Mark, you're a legend. I want to acknowledge you for your non-negotiable approach to your health and well-being, and also how that ripples into your family life and your community. It's very inspiring, mate, and a lot of us can take a lot of inspiration from the work that you do and the man that you show up as. Keep shining your abundant and impactful light to the world, my man.
Thank you, Robbo. I really appreciate that, mate, and thanks for having me on Unbeatable You. It's been great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you.
It was awesome. There you go. Another empowering episode. And thanks again for tuning in. Make sure you check out the show notes for any extra links or information that we spoke about in this episode. Don't forget, you can now catch the Unbeatable You podcast on the YouTube channel, Brett Robbo Coach. If you want info and inspiration straight into your inbox on how to live an unbeatable life, you can sign up to receive weekly insights and actionable steps for optimal performance and thriving in every aspect of your life, plus first release offers on Unbeatable You courses and live events. Don't worry, there's no spam, just short, punchy, value-giving emails straight to you. Simply go to brettrobbo.com/community. If you find value in this podcast, don't forget to share it around with your mates and subscribe, rate, and review. It really supports the podcast mission massively. If you want to reach out to me personally, you can connect with me at Brett Robbo Coach on social media, and that's where you can let me know who you want to hear on the show. Keep thriving, legends, and as always, remember, if not you, then who? If not now, then when? This is your opportunity to live your unbeatable life.